Chapter 8. Shreds of Serenity. There was no evading their private lessons with the sisters, either. Not that Moiraine wanted to, or Swan, either, but long hours sitting and writing left them surprisingly tired, and also left only the evenings free after supper. The accepted, who still rode out every day at sunrise, did the same, though many grumbled at it, when there were no eyes to die around to overhear. At least, they took lessons when lessons were offered. Some sisters refused, saying they would teach accepted again when they no longer had to give novice classes that should have been taught by accepted. All too many Aes Sedai disliked the situation. Gossip said that petitions had been presented to the Ammerlin requesting a return to normal routines, but if so, Tamra rejected them. The sisters' faces remained masks of serenity, yet frequently the eyes of even the mildest flashed with a fire that made novices squeak, and accepted step very gingerly. In the depths of winter's cold, the tower seemed feverish. Swan never spoke of her own experiences, but Moiraine quickly realized that she herself attracted particularly heated looks from nearly every Aes Sedai she encountered, and she understood why. Unlike the rest, she and Swan could have given novice classes and taken their own lessons at a more reasonable hour. A few sisters who taught others at night pronounced themselves busy when either of them tried to schedule a lesson. In some ways, Aes Sedai could be as petty as anyone else, though that was something no accepted dared say aloud. Moiraine hoped these small enmities would fade soon. Paltry irritations sometimes had a way of festering into lifelong antagonisms. What could she do, though? Apologize humbly to those who seemed most angry, begging their indulgence, and hope. She would not give up the lists. Not all sisters were so reluctant. Corrine met with her to discuss the relatively few facts known to historians of Arthur Hawkwing's empire. Malin tested her on the ancient writer Willem of Manaches and his influence on the Saldaean philosopher Shivina Kayenzi, and Aisha questioned her closely on the differences in the structure of law in Shinar and Amadisia. That was the sort of lesson she took now. What they could teach her of the power, what she could learn of it, not always the same, had been imparted months past. Had she dared, she would have asked why they were still in the tower. Why were they not out hunting down the names on the list? Why? And yet she knew the answer. What had to be the answer? Nothing else fit. But they felt no urgency. Taking the boy from his mother straight away would be cruel. Maybe they thought they had years to find him, but if that was the case, they had not even seen the list yet, with so many entries lacking as much as a home village. Maybe they were waiting for its completion. She hoped there were other searchers, because Swan reported Valera and Ludis were still in the tower. No urgency. Moiraine burned with it. Rumor said the fighting continued, many leagues southeast, but only in skirmishes, though some were said to be fierce. Apparently no one among the commanders of the coalition army wanted to press too hard on dangerous foes, who were, after all, in retreat. That last was certain, at least, reported by Aes Sedai. Rumor said many of the Murandians and Daltarans had already packed up and headed south for home, that the Amadisians and Gil'danin planned on following soon. Rumor added that word had come of troubles along the Blight, and the Borderlanders would soon ride north. Aes Sedai, it seemed, paid no heed to rumors. She tried bringing the tales up with them, but "Rumor is irrational and has no place here, child," Malin told her firmly, her gaze serene above the teacup balanced on her fingertips. Now, when Shivina said that reality is illusion, where did she gain insight from Willem, and what was her own?
"If you want to talk of rumors, make them rumors of Hawkwing," Corrine said, voice sharp.
She always toyed with one of her knives while teaching, using it for a pointer. Tonight it was a poor man's belt knife, so old that the wooden handle was cracked and warped.
"The Light knows half of what we have of him is rumor."
Aisha sighed and pointed a stout finger, her soft brown eyes suddenly quite hard. A plain-faced woman who could have passed for a farmer's wife, she wore a wealth of jewelry, earrings with large fire drops, long necklaces of both emeralds and rubies, but only the golden great serpent for a finger ring.
If you cannot keep your mind on the matter at hand, perhaps a visit to Marian is in order. Yes, I thought you'd say that. No, making them see the urgency was just impossible. All she could do was wait, and practice not grinding her teeth. Light, let her test soon. With the shawl on her shoulders, she would be out of the tower and searching for the boy like an arrow leaving the bow. Soon, but not before she had all of the names. Oh, it was such a quandary. The accepted's quarters seethed with rumors more than usual, though not about who had had a spat with whom or which Green was said to be behaving scandalously with a warder. These tales were gotten from guardsmen, from soldiers, from men and women in the camps, about the fighting, about men who had died heroically, and those who had been heroes and still lived. Those were particularly talked over. Such a one might have the qualities of a warder, a subject much discussed by accepted, save the few who already knew they wanted the red. There were tales of camps breaking, though no one knew whether they were moving east after the army or returning home, and tales of small groups remaining behind to make sure that women's names were entered for the tower's bounty. At least that reduced the chances that the right woman would slip away unknown. But if she was already entered and already gone, would she be among those who would be easily found? Moiraine could have screamed from frustration. Elid Abarem had a story from an Aes Sedai, though she insisted it was no rumor. "I heard Adalorna tell Shimaean," Elid said with a smile. Elid always smiled when she saw herself in a mirror, and when she smiled, she always seemed to be looking into one. A gusting evening breeze in the well rippled the waves of golden hair framing her perfect face. Her eyes were like large sapphires, her skin like rich cream. The only fault in her appearance that Moiraine could see was an overabundance of bosom, and she was very tall, nearly as tall as most men. Men smiled at Elid when they did not leer. Novices mooned after her, and too many fools among the accepted envied her. "Adalorna said Gitara had a foretelling that Tarman Gaiden will come during the lifetimes of sisters now breathing. I can't wait. I intend to choose green, you know." Every accepted knew that. "I mean to have 6 warders when I ride to the last battle." Every accepted knew that, too. Elid was always telling you what she intended to do. She almost always did it, too. That hardly seemed fair. "So?" Moiraine said softly, when Elid had joined the others, streaming off to supper. "Gitara did have other foretellings. At least one, and if one, then perhaps more." Swan frowned. "We already know the last battle is coming." She fell silent while Katarina and Serene passed, talking wearily of whether they were too tired to eat, then went on once they were beyond earshot. "What does it matter if Gitara had 12 foretellings or 100? "Swan, did you never wonder how Tamra could be certain this is the time? That the boy will be born now?" "I would say it is very likely that at least one of those other foretellings spoke of him. Something that, put with what we heard her say, told Tamra that now is the time." It was Moiraine's turn to frown in thought. "Do you know how the foretelling was with Gitara?" It took different women in different ways, including how they gave voice to a foretelling. The way she spoke, he could have been being born at that instant. Maybe the shock of that was what killed her. "The wheel weaves as the wheel wills," Swan said glumly, then gave herself a shake. "Light, let's go eat. You still need practice." They had resumed the practicing, too, at least at night, and Mirelle continued to help when she was not so tired that she went straight to her bed after supper, or sometimes before. Enough of the accepted did one or the other that the galleries were still and silent long before the lamps were extinguished. The practice went poorly for Moiraine, especially in the beginning. The very first night Elida entered her room while she was suffering Swan and Mirelle's torments on her flowered rug. The fire had been built as high as the small hearth would accept, but the best that could be said was that the blaze took the edge off the chill. At least it was not freezing. "I'm glad to see you're not taking the excuse of your work to avoid practice," the Red Sister said. Her tone said she was surprised to see it, and contempt wrapped the word work. Once again her dress was pure red,
and she wore her fringed shawl as though on appointed duties. Moving to a corner facing Moiraine, she folded her arms beneath her breasts.
"Continue. I wish to observe."
There was nothing for it but to obey. Perhaps spurred by Elida's presence, Swan and Mirelle did their very best, which meant their very worst for startling slaps and pinches, sudden bangs beside Moiraine's ear, and switch-like blows across her legs, always just when she needed her concentration most. She tried not to look at Elida, but the sister stood where she could not avoid seeing her. Elida's judgmental gaze made her nervous, yet maybe it inspired her as well, or drove her. Focusing herself, concentrating with all she had, she managed to complete 61 weaves before the 62nd collapsed in a tangle of earth, air, water, and spirit that left her skin clammy until she let it dissipate. Not a wonderful performance, but neither was it so terrible. She had come close to completing all 100 on numerous occasions, but she had actually done it only twice, once by the skin of her teeth.
"Pitiful," Elida said, cold as ice. "You'll never pass like that."
"And I want you to pass, child. You will pass, or I'll make you take off your skin and dance in your bones before you're sent away. You two are pitiful friends, if that's how you help her. We knew how to practice when I was accepted."
Directing Swan and Mirelle to the corner where she had been standing, she took their place at the table.
"This will show you how it is done properly. Again, child."
Wetting her lips, Moiraine turned her back. Mirelle gave her an encouraging smile, and Swan nodded confidently, but she could see their worry. What would Elida do? She began. As soon as she embraced the power, flashes of light began streaking across her line of vision, leaving black and silver flecks dancing in her eyes. Bangs and piercing whistles made her ears ring. Blows, as from hard-swung straps or switches, struck her one after another. It was all continuous, with no let-up until she completed a weave, and then only a short pause until she began to weave again. And all the while Elida harangued her in a cold, matter-of-fact tone.
"Faster, child. You must weave faster. The weave must almost leap into being complete. Faster, faster."
Clutching at serenity with her fingernails, Moiraine reached only the 12th weave before her concentration broke completely. The weave not only collapsed, she lost Sidar entirely. Blinking, she tried to clear the dancing flecks from her sight, and more successfully to blink back tears. Pain covered her from shoulders to ankles, bruises, aching, welts, throbbing, stinging from sweat. A constant chime was sounding in her ears.
"Thank you, Aes Sedai," Swan said quickly. "We see what we must do now."
Mirelle's hands were clutching her skirts in fists. Her face was ashen, her eyes wide with horror.
"Again," Elida said.
It took everything Moiraine had in her to make herself turn her back once more. The only difference was that she finished just 9 weaves this time.
"Again," Elida said.
On the 3rd try, she completed 6 weaves and only 3 on the 4th. Sweat rolled down her face. After a while, the flashing lights and ear-piercing whistles hardly seemed more than annoyances. Only the incessant beating mattered. Only the endless beating and the endless pain. On the 5th attempt, she fell to her knees, weeping beneath the first shower of blows. The pummeling ceased instantly, but huddling in on herself, she sobbed as though she would never stop. Oh, light! She had never hurt like this before. Never. She was not even aware of Swan kneeling beside her until the other woman said gently,
"Can you stand, Moiraine?"
Raising her head from the rug, she stared up at Swan's face, full of concern. With an effort she had not thought in her, she managed to master her weeping, barely, then nodded and began to push herself up laboriously. Bruised muscles did not want to lift her. Every movement scrubbed her shift against the sweat-stung welts, clothing her in burning agony.
"She will live," Elida said dryly. "A little pain tonight will drive the lesson home. You must be fast. I will come back in the morning to heal her. And you too, Swan. Help her to the bed and begin."
Swan's face paled, but when an Aes Sedai commanded... Moiraine did not want to watch,
Yet Swan had been forced to, so she held her eyes open by force of will. It made her want to begin weeping all over again. Often when they practiced, Swan managed to complete every last weave despite anything Moiraine could do. She never failed less than 2/3 of the way through. Tonight, under Elida's strict tutelage, she managed 20 the first time. The second it was 17, and 14 on the third. Her face was drained of color and slick with sweat. Her breath came raggedly, but she had not shed a tear. And when a weave failed, she started from the beginning again without so much as a moment's pause. On the fourth try, she finished 12, and 12 on the fifth, the sixth. Doggedly, she began to weave once more. "That's enough for tonight," Elida said. Not one drop of pity touched her voice. Slowly, painfully, Swan turned, the light of Sidar vanishing. Her face was absolutely devoid of expression. Elida went on calmly, adjusting the shawl on her shoulders. "Even if you managed to finish as you are, you would still fail. There isn't a shred of serenity in you." She fixed first Swan and then Moiraine with a stern eye. "Remember, you must be serene, whatever is done to you. And you must be fast. If you are slow, you will fail as surely as if you fall to panic or fear. Tomorrow night we will see if you can do better." Swan waited until the door closed behind the Aes Sedai, then threw back her head. "Oh, light!" she wailed, falling to her knees with a thud, and the tears she had held back came in torrents. Moiraine bounded from the bed. Well, she tried to bound. It was actually more of a pained hobble, and Mirel reached Swan first. The three of them knelt there, holding one another and weeping, Mirel as hard as she or Swan. Finally, Mirel pushed back, sniffing and wiping tears from her cheeks with her fingers. "Wait here," she said, as if they were in condition to go anywhere, and darted from the room. Soon she returned with a red glazed jar the size of her two fists, and also Shiriam and Elid to help get Swan and Moiraine undressed and apply the ointment in the jar. "This is wrong," Elid said fiercely once the pair of them were naked and she was opening the jar, all the gasping over their welts and bruises finished. Shiriam and Mirel nodded quick agreement. "The law forbids using the power to discipline an initiate."
"Oh,"
Swan growled.
"And how often have you had your ear flicked with the power by a sister or gotten a stripe across your bottom?"
A gasp broke from her mouth.
"There's no need to rub that clear to the bone, is there?"
"I'm sorry," Elid said in contrite tones. "I'll try to be easier." Vanity was a powerful fault, but that was her only real fault, her only one. It was very hard to like Elid. "You two should report this. We could all go to Marian."
"No,"
Moiraine breathed hoarsely. Going on, the salve stung worse than the welts. It was better after. A little better. "I think Elida really is trying to help us. She said she wants us to pass." Swan stared at her as though she had sprouted feathers.
"I don't recall hearing her say that. Myself, I think she's trying to make us fail."
"Besides," Moiraine added, "whoever heard..." "Oh, oh!" Shiriam muttered an apology, but the ointment still stung. "Whoever heard of an accepted complaining without paying for it?"
That brought three nods,
grudgingly given, yet they nodded. Novices who complained received a gentle, if firm, explanation of why matters were how they were. Accepted were expected to know better. They were required to learn endurance every bit as much as history or the One Power. "Maybe she'll decide to leave you alone," Shiriam said, but she did not sound as if she believed it would happen. When they finally departed, Mirel left the jar of ointment behind. Only Verin's vile-tasting concoction let them sleep, huddled beneath the blankets in Moiraine's narrow bed, and it was the grim reminder of that jar sitting on the mantel that warred with sleep as much as their welts and bruises. Elida was as good as her word, appearing before daybreak to use healing on them, and it was used, not offered. She merely cupped their heads between her hands and wove without asking. When the intricate weave of spirit, air, and water touched her, Moiraine gasped and convulsed. For a moment it felt as though she were totally immersed in icy water, but when the weave vanished, her yellowing bruises were gone. Unfortunately, Elida supplied a new crop that night and another on the following. Moiraine lasted through 7 attempts and then 10 before pain and tears overwhelmed her. Swan made 10 on the second night and 12 on the third. And Swan never wept until Elida was gone. Not one tear. Shiria, Mirel, and Elid must have kept watch, for each night after Elida left they appeared to offer commiseration while undressing Swan and her and spreading the salve on their injuries. Elid even tried telling jokes, but no one felt like laughing. Moiraine began to wonder whether the jar held enough ointment to last. Had she misheard? Could Swan be right, that Elida wanted them to fail? A cold terror settled in her belly, a leaden lump of ice. She was afraid that the next time she would beg Elida to stop. But Elida would not. She was certain of that, and it made her want to cry. On the morning after Elida's third visit, though, it was Marian who woke them in Swan's bed and offered healing. "She will not trouble you in this manner again," the motherly Aes Sedai told them once their bruises were gone. "How did you find out?" Moiraine asked, hurriedly pulling her shift over her head. With them sleeping like the dead under the influence of Varen's mixture, the fire had burned down to ashes in the night, and the air in the room was cold, if not quite so cold as it had been only days earlier, but the floor was little warmer. She snatched up her stockings from where they had been left, draped over a chair back. "I have my ways, as you should know," Marian replied mysteriously. Moiraine suspected Mirel or Shiriam or Elid, if not all three. But Marianne was Aes Sedai. Never a straight answer when mystery would do, and perhaps do better. In any case, she very nearly earned herself an imposed penance, and I informed her that I'd ask the Amarlin for mortification of the flesh, and I reminded her that what I must deal to sisters is harsher than what I give novices or accepted. She was convinced. "Why shouldn't she get a penance for what she did to us?" Swan asked, reaching behind herself to do up the buttons on her dress. The mistress of novices raised an eyebrow at her tone, which came very close to demanding. But perhaps she believed they deserved a little leeway after Elida. "Had she used Sidar to punish or coerce you, I'd have seen her strapped to the triangle for birching. Yet what she did broke no law." Marian's eyes twinkled suddenly, and her lips curved in a small smile. "Perhaps I shouldn't tell you, but I will. Her penance would have been for helping you cheat in the test for the shawl. All that saved her was the question of whether it actually was cheating. I trust you will accept her gift in the spirit it was given. After all, she paid a price in humiliation for giving it when I confronted her." "Believe me, Aes Sedai, I will," Swan said flatly. What she meant was plain. Marian sighed and shook her head, but said nothing more. The icy lump that had melted from Moiraine's middle when she learned there would be no further lessons from Elida returned twice as large. She had almost helped them cheat? Could she have given them a foretaste of the actual test for the shawl? Light. If the test meant being beaten the whole way, oh, Light, how could she possibly pass? But whatever comprised the test, every woman who wore the shawl had undergone it and succeeded. She would as well. Somehow she would. She pushed Mirel and Swan to be harder on her, but though they sometimes made her weep, they refused to do what Elida had done. Even so, again and again she failed to complete all 100 weaves. That lump of ice grew a little larger every day. They did not see Elida again for 2 days. And then it was on their way to dinner at midday. The Red Sister stopped beside a tall stand lamp at the sight of them, speaking not a word as they curtsied. Still silent, she turned to watch as they passed her. Her face was a severe mask of serenity, but her eyes burned. Her gaze should have scorched the wool of their dresses. Moiraine's heart sank. Clearly Elida thought they had gone to the Mistress of Novices themselves. And she had paid a price in humiliation, according to Marian. Moiraine could think of several ways that the threat of a penance could be used to make Elida give way, and every one of them would have wrung the sister with humiliation. The only question was, how hard had Marianne wrung? Very hard, likely. She did speak of the novices and accepted as being hers. Oh, this was no small enmity that might fester over time. What was in Elida's eyes was full-blown animosity. They had acquired an enemy for life. When she told Swan as much, and her reasoning, the taller woman grunted sourly. Well, I never wanted to be her friend, did I? I'll tell you, once I gain the shawl, if she ever tries to harm me again, I'll make her pay. Oh, Swan, Moiraine laughed. I said I do not go about harming one another. But her friend would not be assuaged. 1 week to the day after Guitara made her foretelling, the weather warmed suddenly. The sun rose in a cloudless sky on what seemed like a cool spring day, and before sunset most of the snow had melted. All of it was gone around Dragon Mount, except on the very peak. The ground around the mountain had its own warmth, and snow always melted there first. The limit had been set. It was a boy born within those 10 days that they sought. 2 days later, the number who met the criteria began to dwindle sharply, and near a week on, 5 days had passed without another name being added to their small books. They could only hope that no more were found, though. 9 days after the thaw, in the dim light before dawn, Marianne appeared on the gallery as Swan and Moiraine were leaving for breakfast. She was wearing her shawl. "Moiraine Damodred," she said formally, "you are summoned to be tested for the shawl of an Aes Sedai. The light keep you whole and see you safe."